question number 28660, Captain Robert Bonner, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about your time with the Royal Army Education Corps. We've decided it's not Beaconsfield. We're just going to leave it at Salisbury Plain. That's as far as we're going to get. Now, obviously, you were suffering from this appalling winter, and it really was a bad winter, as you've described. But it was a sort of holding unit, but what else were they doing with you? I mean, I presume they had something that they were doing with you while you were there.
In retrospect, it's difficult to know what, in fact, we were doing there. We were certainly doing... there was no physical training at this stage. It was all purely, I suppose, preliminary to a period of scholastic training. We had lots of lectures on current affairs. ABCA, Army Bureau of Current Affairs. Yes, very socialistically.
You were aware of that, because that is exactly what I was just going to say. You were aware of just how socialist it was.
Yes, it was very apparent to most of us, I think, that these pamphlets and books were very left-wing biased, and to make matters worse, of course, so many of the young instructors of the Educational Corps at that time did appear to be thoroughly behind the motives of the publications we were being lectured on. So,
now, how did you react to that? I mean, were you also at the time in sympathy, did you find this abhorrent?
I don't think any of us really paid very much attention to it, because we weren't at all interested in politics. Certainly I wasn't, and I don't think that any of my chums at that time were at all. So it was all really rather boring. It wasn't done in a very effective manner. The people who were lecturing us were not all that interested. And
any military training, any military lectures or tactical lectures or even military history?
I don't really recollect. It would have been an ideal opportunity to have done military history as a subject, but I don't remember anything like that at all. In fact, the whole thing was aggravated by the living conditions and the weather, and I suppose we probably were able to get home on leave for quite a large segment of the period we were actually at that particular camp.
I should have asked, were you required to help out at local farmers and things?
Oh, no, nothing like that at all.
No, I mean, just with the bad weather conditions.
No, you weren't helping at all.
So you were there until December or January?
No, we were there until, I should think, the end of November, beginning of December, and then went home on final leave, ready to the report to Camberley in early January 1947.
And this was to Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst?
Yep.
And which college was it then that you were reported to? I'm not sure whether old, new, and Victory and all the rest of it.
Right, well, Sandhurst during the war had been used as an octu for officers with temporary commissions. Lots of people from the Polish Army, I understand, and had then in the intervening period of after the war, and to January 1947, had been they had spent preparing for this new generation of regular army officers. We were called Intake One, and we were known affectionately and to this day as the guinea pigs. And we, first of all, were old college was still being prepared. So although we were divided into old and new college, we all took up residence for our first half term in the new college buildings. And then after the end of our first term, those of us who were at Old College moved into the superb Old College building itself, and I was in Inkerman Company. And this was the first period of our 18-month period at Sandhurst.
Now, the first period you were in New College.
Purely living there, but we were old college.
Now, tell me about the organisation into companies. So you were Inkerman Company, full-name companies. How big was it? A full-size company?
For the first 3 months, there was only intake one there. I think we were 300. We were 360 sales. And then at half term, we were joined by intake 1A, another similar number. And then the intake 2 arrived after we had been there 6 months. And then thereafter, they joined at 6 monthly intervals. So in the early days, we had this unusual situation of intake 1 and intake 1A, but we were fearfully superior because we were there 3 months before the others.
Now, take me through the training. What were the headings for the training, and what training did you get?
Drill, military studies, military history.
What military history were you doing? Was this sort of based on the Second World War and the First World War, or was it Napoleon, the principles of war? What level of military history was it?
It was an absolutely fascinating sequence of subjects, really, in the military history. It covered everything from the Napoleonic Wars right through to Alamein and the other battles of World War II. We had an extremely talented group of civilian lecturers in the history wing, and we were fortunate in people like Alan Brooke and Montgomery and Alexander coming regularly to give evening lectures to the whole academy. So we couldn't have had better background information.
What were they like as lecturers, the generals? We'll come back to, I don't know whether Peter Young was. I was going to ask about
Peter Young. Yeah.
Can I ask about these rather famous generals? What were they like as lecturers? I mean, were they impressive in their grasp of this?
I suppose the most impressive was Montgomery. He came to Sandhurst, certainly. Three times, I suppose, in my period there, and of course he always started off his lecture by making everybody clear their throats and cough, and we'll have 3 minutes coughing, he says, and then I don't want to hear anything whilst I'm giving my talk. And he was very interesting in his usual inimitable flamboyant style. There was on one occasion when he came, though, he was extraordinarily put out because, and I will have to, Farron, yes, Roy Farron was, Captain Roy Farron was a junior instructor at the academy, and Montgomery asked for any questions, and Farron stood up and asked a couple of very pertinent questions, which the Field Marshal found embarrassing and totally unable to give them the benefit of an answer. And it caused a lot of amusement, and Montgomery was distinctly embarrassed about it all.
It was
an embarrassing question about some decision or other which he had, commitment he had made during the war, which Farron had actually been involved with. And
it wasn't Arnhem, was it?
I honestly don't remember. But whatever it was, he didn't like the question, and Farron didn't like his answer, and made it quite clear that he didn't like his answer. Captain Farron disappeared from the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst. In a matter of 2 or 3 weeks later, posted away.
What did you expect, to be honest?
Yes. His brother was later killed, blown up in Tel Aviv.
What did you think of Montgomery's? I mean, was he lecturing basically on his own experience, or was he drawing lessons from the battles he fought? I mean, his great thing was logistics and preparations. I mean, was he hammering that home to you, or was he just telling the story?
He was really telling the story more than hammering home anything of any particular personal involvement. Really giving the background to when he was Alamein, giving the background the way he had seen the battle going, the way he had foreseen its movements, and the way it actually transpired.
Were you impressed by him overall, or did you take Farham's side?
I think we all liked him to a degree, but not nobody could really have. There wasn't much opportunity of making much of a personal decision about whether we liked him or not. He was really in a role apart from that which we were accustomed to.
Any of the other famous generals? Or was that he the one you remember best?
I remember him best because in our last term at Sandhurst, he came to lunch and went into had lunch in the New College officers' mess and left his famous beret with the badges on at the table at the foot of the grand entrance, and some of the cadets, including my friend Officer Cadet Holloway, decided what a jest it would be to remove the Field Marshal's hat. So they took away Field Marshal's beret, but his driver in his row was outside and saw all this happening, went inside and reported it to the Field Marshal, and he was not amused. And this really, I suppose, brought out the true side of him. He didn't think it was a cadet jape at all. And Mike Holloway and a couple of others, they were nearly returned to unit, but they weren't, but they got a severe telling off.
Now, what about P.T. Young? P.T. Young was on the staff, was he? Because he's quite a character, and we've heard quite a bit from other officers.
Peter wasn't on the staff at that time.
So, were there any particular lecturers or historians there that you recall? Camberley wouldn't be there either, would he? No, not Camberley.
Staff Lodge. Staff Lodge was there. No, I remember it was with great happy. I remember my German tutor, Mr. Cox, most particularly.
And you had German lessons?
Yes.
Well,
tell us
about that,
then. Yes, we had. There was a modern language wing. We could study Russian, French, German. I had chosen German.
Why?
Because I'd already done a certain amount of German language at school, and I was very interested in the language. And we had our lecturers were very good. They were C.A.J. Cox, particularly, was... I got on extraordinarily well with. He was also a fine photographer, and he and I ran the Photographic Society. I was the secretary and he was the chairman, and he taught me a great deal about Germany and the German language, and we were very, very good friends.
Was it an examined subject, part of, you know?
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. So modern languages were quite important, and the Russian...
I just did German. So that's military history, German. What else have we learned?
Mathematics. Mathematics, because of the now under the new Sandhurst course, all the engineers and the gunners were involved with the infantry and the yeomen and the cavalry, so. They all had to learn mathematics, and then.
But you infantry officers had to learn it.
We all learned it. Everybody learned the same thing, because at that stage we weren't in any. We were all cadets, anonymous cadets, Transportation was very important. We were taught to drive.
You learned to drive?
We learned to drive.
Tell me about that. How did they teach you to drive? I mean, army driving is different. I mean, yes. Different vehicles, types of vehicles. What was the process?
Well, we had a lot. We were taught the workings of the internal combustion engine, first of all. So that was a subject which I never understood and still don't. So we had quite a lot of classroom work. And then we were taught to drive on 1,500 weight trucks and BSA motorcycles. And we would go and terrorize the local Hampshire population, drive them off the roads from time to time. But we were given a very thorough instruction by sergeants of the Royal Army Service Corps.
And that would give you a civilian license, a license.
That's right.
Valid.
That's right, indeed. At the end, on commissioning, all I had to do was to take my certificate along to the licensing office, and I was automatically issued with a driving license. So I didn't have to take a civilian driving license test at any time.
Now, you mentioned drill. Was Britain there?
No, this is before Britain. This is RSM... God.
It's all right. What was he like?
Oh, he was superb.
They had a history.
That's right. I mean,
of developing of these huge characters.
He was the most magnificent character. And I must, heavens, Shagger Brandt.
Brandt.
Yes, Brandt. Brandt. B-R-A-N-D.
What was he like? Was he as big a character as Britain? You know, Britain was famous, but
He was a superb regimental sergeant major. He was the epitome of a pre-war regimental sergeant major. He wore pre-war uniform and puttees up to his knee. He was a kind, gentle, but superb regimental sergeant major. And he was known and respected throughout the whole of the army.
Did he run you ragged? As cadets, or was he
fairly fit? No, his job wasn't to run the shragget at all. His job was to stand in the middle of the square, see the whole sort of 1,000 cadets on parade, and say, take the name of that man in the second rank. He's got the button undone, and that he did most beautifully. But he was magnificent. He hadn't perhaps got the flamboyance of either Britain or not. Well, Britain was at Okcho. Britain didn't come till later. It was Lord, RSM Lord followed him. Lord, I'm Lord down here. He's Lord up there. I'm Lord down here.
did you meet RSM Lord? Was he there while you were there in the 18 months?
No, Lord arrived as he took over from Brand.
And you'd gone by then?
Yes.
Now, what about the military side? The practical military side. I mean, did you generally redo your basic training? Because we don't need to revisit this.
We redid all our basic training, some manoeuvres.
Now, what level of tactical training? I mean, what were the basic principles of the tactics that were getting through to you? I mean, because they did have a principle on battle drills and things.
Battle, yes.
What do you remember of it?
Well, we had sand table exercises constantly. Moving, which were all pretty well based on operations which had taken place during World War II, realistic models, and then we had.
Were they useful, the sand table?
They were very good. Yes, they were very good, very interesting. They were really rather when we had to get involved ourselves in actually demonstrating and using them, it was really rather frightening. Because one was trying to be clever and knowledgeable and speak authoritatively about these situations, which without any real experience, but it was all good training.
Were they carrying out war games on the sand tables, or were they just demonstrations of battles that they'd stop up?
War games was unknown in those days, so it was really a question of, I suppose it was a simplification of what became war games, but it was a question of really of moving units and organisations in a set piece situation.
What about chutes on outside on the ground?
Chutes were a regular feature.
I know I've used it, it's obvious I know, but could you explain what chutes were?
Chutes, a tactical exercise without troops. Well, what was this one? Was a chute? Well, good Lord, yes, I got involved in a chute, but it was really given. We were given a situation, and we would be given, each cadet would be given a different role to play in that particular situation, and from time to time take the lead and move people around in the, as if they were representing a larger. Larger force than they themselves were. So that one man might be representing a platoon, might be a company, or a battalion, these would be based on realistic situations.
And you'd be actually outside.
On the ground, yes, indeed, constantly under the eyes of our senior instructors.
I'll come back to that. Now, what about the final stage? It's actually exercises. Did you go out on night exercise, daytime exercise, things? What were the exercises like?
We used to go out on, particularly in the last 6 months of our training there, go out on 2 and 3 day day exercises, living out in in the open country and digging trenches and. Doing all those sort of things which one might expect.
What would a typical 3 day exercise be like? What would the course of it be like? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly.
I know you can't remember one specifically, probably now, but.
Well, we would be given, we would be split up into probably opposing forces, and the leadership was probably taken by the senior under officers and the junior under officers and the NCOs to start with, and they would be given roles of actually operational roles, and they would be responsible then for moving us into certain geographical situations, putting out their defensive or attacking formations, and working out what was going to happen before the instructors came along and changed the modus operandi or the frame of the battle. So everybody will be given an opportunity from the sort of senior junior officer to the lowest officer cadet to exercising some form of leadership in the field in the face of an opposing enemy. Whether
they have Gurkhas usually.
Yes.
Being the enemy. Did you have any troops being the enemy
then? No, we didn't in those days, no. No. We did spend quite a lot of time on instructional expeditions to the Royal Navy and Royal Air Force.
Tell me about that, because that's interesting. Not many have mentioned them. Or perhaps they stopped doing it. What would you do, what were you learning in the visits to the RN and the RAF?
Well, we certainly remember very clearly going to Portsmouth and going on board a submarine, which was a most interesting experience for all of us, and being given various tours around naval establishments. But the submarine lingers in my mind more than anything else. We also did quite a lot of liaison with the Royal Air Force.
What type of liaison?
Working with being instructed by them in an RAF location on aerial photography and the reading of aerial photographs and that sort of thing.
Was this valuable in giving you a greater appreciation of their roles and how things fit together? Did it work, in other words?
Oh, I think it worked extremely well, yes. Even in those early days, we did, although there wasn't the great influence of external organisations, we did have occasions when the cadets from France would come from Saint-Cyr and from America from West Point and stay with us and work with us for 2 or 3 weeks, which was also very interesting. And we
did you have exchange visits with them, or did you not get that option?
I think the British financial situation in those days was such that it was very one-sided. But it also leads me on to think of the, apart from our recreational activities, such as the Photographic Society, which I mentioned.
Talk about that, because that is quite interesting. I mean, what got you into it? Was that always your hobby? Or?
Well, I'd always been interested in photography. But again, under the, I must say, dear C.A.J. Cox, was probably an even bigger influence in being a good photographer himself, and having to, and we already had a sort of nice rapport from his in his tutorial duties in German language, and we had a very up and thriving photographic society.
And this is nothing to do with military.
No.
It was just enjoying taking, developing.
Doing everything, indeed. Yes. So. It gave an interest in cameras, gave us a knowledge of developing and processing, and certainly encouraged me incredibly to be taking photographs ever since.
Now, how did you get on with the instructors, the tutors generally? I mean, what did you think of them generally as instructors?
They were an extremely able group of men. Most of them had tremendous personalities, and they were very interested in looking after the interests of the cadets. And I remember one particular John, what was it? John Selby. John Selby was one of the tutors, civilian tutor, and he was very involved, aside from his tutorial duties at Sandhurst. He was involved with the, to the best of my knowledge, with the hierarchy of the German prisoners of war who were stationed, who were not in prisoner of war camps, but who were in large country houses in the south of England, and who were sort of. And who presumably were going being debriefed, interrogated, or whatever. But I remember him very kindly taking me on a couple of occasions out to one of these large country houses and going into this area where all these ex-Wehrmacht generals and were leading a fairly cosy life, as it were, whilst he went along and presumably debrief them on certain aspects of their military life.
Which you wouldn't be there.
I was not there. But it was an interesting way that he took an interest in one of the cadets and sort of broadened my outlook on things that were going on in this world.
Now, was there any part of your training devoted to your conduct as an officer, the expected method of behaviour of an officer, you know, both in dealing with people below him, with servants, with and of course behaviour in the mess, and some of this will be, I presume, taken as read. But were you actually formally told how to behave in these three areas?
Well, I'm sure, without doubt we were. We were told that we were we might be the guinea pigs, but we were certainly the brightest and best, and so much was expected of us. We were constantly told that in the gentlest of ways that much was expected of us, and of course in matters of procedures and things. We had these magnificent dining rooms at Sandhurst where we dined virtually every night in the manner that we were going to become accustomed to in joining an officer's mess. So
you learned how to behave in an officer's
mess. So we learned how to behave. We learned how we all had each, we had our own servants who looked after us, wonderful old soldiers. Each wing of the academy had a group of these dear old boys.